So I'll just start by saying this is Rosemary Hall recording on behalf of the Dialect and Heritage Project for the University of Leeds. It's Wednesday the 19th of October 2022, and could I ask you please to introduce yourself?
I'm Catherine Jenner, and I worked on the Archive for Vernacular Culture project between 2002 and 2005.
Okay, can you tell me how you came to be involved?
I'd been working in special collections doing cataloguing projects, and I think it was suggested that I apply for the job by Chris Shepherd, who was the head of special collections at the time. The job had actually been advertised and I'd seen it, and they'd interviewed and not appointed anybody. I think they were actually looking for an impossible person, because they were looking for somebody with sort of library and archiving skills, but who was also a language specialist. So it was almost like, I guess a bit like finding a needle in a haystack. It was almost like looking for the impossible person. But Chris thought that I would be sort of capable and wondered if I was interested, and so I went for an interview and I got the job, which is great.
Who was your interview with?
It was with Clive Upton, I think Oliver Pickering, who I knew from working in the library as well, and I think there may have been other people there, but I don't remember.
Yeah. And can you tell me about your role? What did it entail?
So my role was basically to support Robin Wiltshire as archivist. So my title was research assistant, and I basically worked alongside him. He was the archive professional, so he was leading on sort of approaches. I learnt a lot from him in that respect. But we basically worked together, just sort of going through everything, deciding on how we were going to build this giant catalogue and sort of go through everything.
What was it like when you first saw some of the materials?
one thing that I really remember is that we actually had to find some of the materials. I know Clive had rescued a lot of stuff, I think, from being skipped. Essentially, as I understand it, and it had been sort of boxed up, and a lot, most of it was up in special collections already in the stacks, and you know, as a mixture of, I can remember sort of shelves upon shelves of reel-to-reel audio tapes that obviously we then got to, we literally listened to them all, and sort of transferred them onto a digital format in real time. Robin and I would spend a part of every day sitting in front of a reel-to-reel tape recorder, listening, sometimes mending, making notes for the catalogue so that we could get the detail. I think we went through several reel-to-reel tape recorders. We kept having to go and find new working ones. I remember that. But yeah, going back to just actually locating some of the archive, I can remember Robin and I were told that there were potentially other audio tapes in a room in the School of English, and that there might be other papers kind of being sort of just tucked away. And so we went to various rooms. We found some extra tapes in a cupboard, and that was fine, but we also ended up in a room that I think hadn't been used for some time and was full of like filing cabinets and boxes. And I can remember having to actually climb up on and down the other side of a filing cabinet to see what was in there, and coming up with a, you know, like another box of stuff that looked like it belonged with the rest of the archive. So it was, some of it was a bit of an adventure actually.
Can you remember what it was that you retrieved?
No, I can't remember at all. I do just remember going over. So, you know, it was 20 years ago. I was a lot younger and slimmer than I am now. So it was me that was sent over to scale the filing cabinet and jump down the other side.
How did it feel? How did it feel to make discoveries?
It was great. It was great. It felt good to be. It is like saving something, isn't it? So, yeah, it was good.
Can you tell me a bit more about the listening and the mending that you mentioned?
The audio tapes, a lot of them were on reel to reel. Some of them were in better condition than others. So we did find sometimes that when we'd start playing them, the tapes would sometimes break. And so then it was a sort of patching up job. But, you know, it was the only way to find out really, really, truly what was on them. You know, they're often labelled. Some of them had little, and it would have an indication of contents. Some of them related to the survey of English dialects. A lot of them were from the Institute of Dialect and Folklife Studies, related to student theses and student research. Covering a whole range of things. So, yeah, I mean, it was, when I say mending, it was very basic. It was a little sort of splicer and a blade and tape. Robin taught me how to do that because he'd done it before. And the listening, yeah, I mean, that was fascinating, actually. Just literally hearing all the interviews, all those people's voices, all those people's memories about all sorts of things. It was just incredible, really. Quite a privilege.
Yeah. Did you have any favourites?
There are a couple that have sort of stuck with me. One of them was it was actually a folk song recordings, and if Robin were here, he would know straight away who the collector was, but I can't remember. I think it was Ian, possibly Ian someone. I think who is somebody who went on to become known as a folk song researcher, a folk song specialist. And it was a family who I think came from Whitby, possibly three generations of them together, singing a whale fishing song, like a traditional whale fishing song, completely unaccompanied, but all kind of harmonies and stuff. It was just beautiful, really beautiful. And the other one that actually really stuck with me was, there was a series of them actually, a series of recordings that Clive had made for his PhD, I guess, on the language of the meat trade. It was quite interesting. I think Robin and I were both a bit unkeen about starting to listen to those because both of us were vegetarian. But it was actually really, really fascinating listening to. I think there was one man who had been he'd been a slaughterman, or he'd been a farmer, or a farmer who had slaughtered his own animals. And I can remember being really interested about, you know, as a vegetarian, listening to somebody talking about how they kill an animal was, you know, Bit weird maybe, but this man had a lot of compassion and a lot of care, and his animals meant a lot to him, the animals that he was working with. And he was, you could hear how upset he was at the changes that meant that animals had to be sent to slaughterhouses to be killed en masse. rather than the gentle approach that he would, and respectful approach that he would take with, you know, an individual animal. That has always stuck with me. It's really, really interesting.
Can you describe, Catherine, a sort of typical day?
I'm not sure there was a sort of typical day. I guess when we were all in the office together, we were in a basement office, which was always rather dark. It did have a window, but you were kind of looking up and you could see it was light outside, but it wasn't actually in the office. And
which building would that have been?
It was in one of the houses. I've got number 9 in my head, but I don't know. But number 9 is my house here, so I don't know whether I'm just like conflating the two somehow. But it was one of the houses, sort of opposite and down from the main School of English building. Clive had an office right at the very top, up several flights of stairs, and we were literally in the basement. So, yeah. If ever we had to go up and go see him, it was like 4 or 5 flights of stairs or something. It was ridiculous. But yeah, I mean, we'd generally, if the three of us, Robin, Johnny, and I, when Johnny was working with us as well, when we were all in, I think either Robin or I would be there with headphones on, doing the taping. The other one of us would be making notes or cataloguing. Robin would be busy with a load of SED fieldwork notebooks on his desk, going through all that stuff. I guess it was quite quiet in there a lot of the time because we were all getting on with our own things. It wasn't that we were ignoring each other, but we were all just sort of getting on. But one thing I did remember, which I've also got a really, really fond memory of, is I think it started off the back of a student thesis about football chants or something like that. And the way the office was arranged, so the four walls, you had a window, and then I was facing one wall, Johnny was facing one wall, Robin was facing one wall. So we were basically all sitting with our backs to each other when we were doing our own thing. The tape thing was off in a corner. And Robin and Johnny were both football fans, and they'd been talking a bit about this, and it had been completely quiet. And then one of them would start up with, like, I actually wish I could remember what they were, because it was absolutely hilarious. They ended up sort of taking it in turns just to do football chants at each other, not actually looking at each other, just sort of working away at their desks, kind of, you know, chanting.
And that would be very spontaneous, very, or inspired
It was completely spontaneous. I think they had been talking about it, but it almost came out of nowhere. And I can remember kind of turning around and thinking, what on earth is going on? It was very funny, though. Very funny.
Did you spend time together socially as a team?
Not really. I think Robin and I would have lunch together and things. And I did keep in touch with Robin and Julia for a while after the project as well. And met Natasha and the twins as well. So, yeah.
Yeah.
A little bit.
And Clive?
I can remember going to, I think it was like a summer, he had a sort of open house, I guess, for staff in the School of English and partners and family. I can remember going over there once. Yeah, he was very welcoming, actually, Clive, very welcoming.
And you would have been far too late to ever have met Orton.
Yeah. I can't remember. I used to know his dates off the top of my head, but I think he died sometime before. I did meet Stanley Ellis though, and Stanley was really, really lovely. He was a lovely man.
Tell me about
Very
that.
Very nice. He just came in. He came down to the office and we talked. I think he was delighted that something was being done with this amazing archive that he'd helped build. He was great. He was a very lovely man.
How often would you see him?
Not that often, but if ever he was in Leeds, he'd kind of pop in. It wasn't very often, but he would come and, you know, come down to the office and sit and look at stuff. And it was sometimes, it was an opportunity for Robin and I as well to sort of ask him, you know, if we'd come across stuff that we weren't sure about. We actually came across, because Stanley had been, as a dialect expert, had been involved with trying to identify the accent of the person who was the Yorkshire Ripper hoaxer. We actually came across a police tape while we were sort of doing our research. I suspect that was handed on appropriately. But yeah, he's a good man, Stanley.
What would you say was the spirit of the project?
When you say spirit, what do you mean exactly?
I suppose the driving force behind it, or the reasons for it.
I think it felt, and I think this probably was the reasoning behind it. It felt like we were saving something. It felt like we were saving something that was actually really important. And I think maybe over the years since the Institute of Dialect and Folklife Study had closed, its importance had, people started not to appreciate it. As I understand it, the whole thing basically came from Harold Alton's recognition that times were changing in such a way that language was changing, and words and idioms and all those things were changing and being lost. And through that, realizing that it wasn't just, you know, it was ways of life as well. And it would have been a real shame to have lost all that. So it did feel like saving something. It did feel like saving something.
Have you ever had any reason to use the LAVC since, or revisit it?
No, I worked with Fiona Douglas briefly before I left the university on a pilot project for a partnership with museums. So that was nice, sort of revisiting that then. I think when you work so closely with an archive, and particularly over a period of time, I mean, that's sort of 3 years, you do develop, you build up this knowledge that I guess when you finish work with it has nowhere else to go. So it was nice to be able to use that again. Also, while I was working on other projects post the Archive of Vernacular Culture project at the university, the Folk Museum, Swaledale Folk Museum, got in touch and asked if there was somebody who could come do a talk. And so I went and did a talk on the photographic, some of the photographic content. There was, I think it would have been early to mid 60s, there was a German photographer called Werner Kissling, who went out for the Institute of Dialect and Folk Life Studies and did lots of field work and built this this amazing body of photographs, a lot of which were taken in the Dales, including the area, you know, Swaledale and around Reith. And so, you know, when the museum got in touch, the photographs were always a bit of a sort of favourite of mine. I worked with the photographic archive and listed all those things. So it was really nice to be able to go and share something that had that immediate connection with the local area. And one of the things that was really amazing about that is that one of the people who came along to the talk was somebody who had in the 1960s had taken Werner Kissling down a lead mine sort of locally. You know, this guy was, he's very old, but he was there. And the other thing that was really nice is that they said it was one of the best attended talks they'd ever had. And I guess people like, I mean, that in itself, I think, shows the importance of the archive. In that it's captured something of the landscape and the history and the people that maybe some people remember, and, you know, it's lovely to see it again. But also the people maybe don't remember, they're aware of it, but maybe didn't live through it themselves and can look back and still recognise some of it. So, yeah, that was great.
There was a fire, Catherine, and you had to save one thing from the archive.
Oh, God, I'd have to, like, really beef up and grab the boxes of photographs in a wanna, I think.
The photographs.
Yeah, the photographs are amazing. But having said that, though, you know, I say that because I work so closely with them, but all those recordings as well, all the tape recordings. So, you know, they're irreplaceable. They are irreplaceable.
And do you mind if I ask you a bit about your own dialect story?
Yeah, I've got a bit of a weird accent, actually. I don't really know where my accent comes from. I moved about a little bit as a child. So I was born in Northampton, although both of my parents were from South London. And we moved back to South London when I was very young. And then we moved up to South East Scotland. And I was there for a few years. And then we moved back down more south again to Hertfordshire. And then I went to university in Leeds. And I've lived in West Yorkshire since the early 90s, really. So I think it's funny. I do sometimes wonder how conscious people are about the way they, you know, the way they speak. I'm sort of not, it just comes out, but I am aware. Well, if I talk to somebody who is very much from the south, I work with people at the moment who are London based, they will tell me I sound really northern, and I don't sound northern. You know, if you ask somebody here what I sound like, they would say I sound southern. So I guess I've got a bit of a mongrel accent.
Have you picked up any words from the different places that you've lived that you still use?
No, but I think there are some brilliant words that I remember from being a kid in southeast Scotland, though. Muckle, that was one of my favourite ones for something that's really big. Muckle. That was, yeah.
Would you have used that at the time?
Yeah, because all the kids in school were using it. So, yeah, of course.
Yeah. Excuse me. And is there anything I haven't asked you, Catherine, that I should have done about your time working on the LAVC?
I don't think so.
No, or any other memories you'd like to share?
I think I've mentioned the things that I really wanted to. I wanted to say how amazing Stanley Ellis was, because he really was. And I wanted to mention the photographs, and I wanted to say how great Robin and Johnny were to work with as well. And I've done that. So
lovely. Oh, thank you so much for your time. It's been a real privilege.
Thank you.